Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Like when I post something, it's much more about like, this is what I'm going through. And, you know, I need to get this out of my head and try to commiserate. And like, you know, we made up a slogan a long time ago. Like, if I'm not memeing, I'm screaming.
Hey everyone, welcome to
Attentive Fatherhood
on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm Bradley Hazemeyer. Each week, I bring you honest and hilarious conversations with men from all types of backgrounds. But at the end of the day, we all just want to be better dads. Question: how does an architect slash engineer become a stay-at-home dad for more than 10 years while also going on to create one of the most popular dad meme accounts on Instagram? Only Roger Strong from Real Tough Dad can answer that one. But first, hey, attempters, how the heck are you? How was your week? What a week it's been. It feels like 2 weeks, because actually it has been 2 weeks. If you're keeping score at home, I love that expression, by the way. Do people still do that? You sit there, you know, watching a baseball game and actually keep score at home. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I don't. This past week, I was working on some really exciting video projects coming up. We're going to be shooting them this week, but it was a lot of pre-production. Plus, I was traveling to see my parents because Ellis had a couple days off of school. Sometimes the attempting of fatherhood actually extends to attempting to get an episode edited and professional stuff as well. So we're here and we're doing it. And I am so excited for you guys to meet the man behind Real Tough Dad. Now, I'll admit, when I was doing some research for this season, different guests I wanted to have, I didn't even know about Real Tough Dad. But then it turns out I have seen them before because the memes are hilarious. They're so poignant, and you got to know who's behind these, right? Because that person is having a very real experience, because that's not just like a general, someone who's funny, oh, I bet a dad thinks this. It's like, no, I'm thinking that in the moment, and I wanted to meet who they were, and the they is actually just a one. It's a he. It's Roger Strong. So we'll talk about him in just a second. Now, we are already halfway through season three, which is crazy how quickly things are moving. As always, I want to remind you to be supporting the show. Yes, you can support the show with a simple share. Tag us in stories on Instagram if there was a funny post or a good interview that you liked. And if you want some swag, DM me on Instagram at Attempting Fatherhood. Or you can email me, bradley@attemptingfatherhood.com. Boom, I got some stickers and stuff I can send your way. All right, so this chat with Roger was really interesting. He's an older dad. He is a stay-at-home dad, and he comes from a military family. So he's like, it's really like three conversations, like three dads in one. He brought a lot of really cool conversation to the table. Here's his dad stats. Married for 23 years, has three kids, 10, 8, 6. And as an OG stay-at-home dad, he's got some hilarious stories that he brings to the table here about how people would see him at the park with his kids, and they would just kind of essentially ask him like, oh no, what's wrong with your wife? Is she sick? Did you volunteer to babysit the kids? If you're a dad listening, have you ever heard that before? Someone being like, oh, you have the kids today? And it's not meant to be mean. I know those are just cultural norms. I'm not knocking that. But, you know, as you guys know, there is a shift happening, right? Because if you're listening to a dad podcast, you've got to be a fairly involved dad. So you know that things are shifting. And Roger talks about that. This was interesting too. His dad was in the military. He talks about how even though his dad was gone for long stints at a time, whether it was overseas or just, you know, out of the city where they were living, he was working on super top secret stuff. So he was closed off about that, and he was closed off about pretty much everything Roger talks about. But he knew his absence, his dad's absence, was kind of out of a sense of duty rather than just selfishness. Like dad wants to play golf on Saturdays or something like that all day long, which I'm not knocking golf. If you need a break, you need a break. Hashtag mental health. I get that. But the idea that dad isn't being selfish and just taking all this time for himself and leaving and doing whatever he wants, it's more so that there's this sense of duty. And he talks about that. Also, I should warn you, trigger warning. He talks about Enneagrams. I'm not exactly sure anymore. I know from churches to MBA programs, this personality test is super popular. And it is very interesting and very helpful in understanding yourself and your kids. He explains a little bit about that if you don't already know or if you're not overwhelmed with it already. Finally, his dad advice at the very end was very powerful. I want you to stick around to the end because I loved what he said. So you can hear that. Take it. Do what he says. I know I'm doing that. But enough from me. It's time to find out how Roger Strong of Real Tough Dad is attempting fatherhood. Obviously, I want to say thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the show, Roger Strong.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Real Tough Dad, give me the nuts and bolts. What is it? How did it start?
It all started as a result of my life as a full-time stay-at-home dad. I started at about 6 years into the process, and I was a big fan of all the memers that were out there, and you know, got a lot of comfort out of seeing people go through the same thing. And at the time, I was meeting about every day with another stay-at-home dad. We commiserated our lives together. We spent almost every day together. We would, you know, text each other what park we were going to. We would just meet up. And so we basically raised our kids together. And then at 6 years in, our kids went to different schools. And so our schedules completely diverged, and life changed dramatically for both of us. And so I was really looking for a way to connect with other people and have an outlet for myself, because when you're 6 years deep into something and you're not sure how much longer it's going to last, you're kind of grasping for your reality and totally trying to find out who you are. And I found early on that that I needed to engage my life instead of lamenting like, oh, what else am I going to do?
Ooh, I like that.
What's my career going to be? It's like I had to engage it fully. It's like, this is my life. I'm living with my kids. I'm every day with my kids. Like, this is it. And what I found by doing that was that the material wrote itself at that point. And I was just documenting my days and then trying to find humor in it, and sarcasm and snark and wit and whatever I could, you know, muscle together just to make sense of the world that I was in. And I just found that, like, it became such a release for me. I gathered so much from what other people had done for me, but it was also, it's such a relief and a release for me now, just to put something together. It's like if I had this most insane morning with my kids, and it's like it reminds me of X, and I'm like, oh, I find that, and like, and I'm frantically doing a search for, like, you know, whatever you want to pick an emotion, and it's like discontent. How do I just find the right image for discontent?
Right.
And then kind of spiral from there. And so it just became a way to release that tension and to also document my life. And so if you dare to scroll through my entire post,
and people should, because they're hilarious and they're done very well,
you'll basically see my daily blog. That is like every post. I remember every post. I remember exactly what happened. And it's like I can tell you exactly who did what and why I felt that way. And
that's so cool. It becomes kind of a journal of your fatherhood journey. It's like almost at that level, like, yes, it's great that people are coming on board, but how cool is it that you can look back on that, like you just said, and like remember exactly that moment, or like that's when that thing spilled, or that's when that broke, or we were late to this, or you know those moments. That's so cool.
Yeah. It really is interesting to go back and look at some of the earlier ones and go like, oh, I remember that day. But, you know, and then to post the things and have it resonate with people and have people connect with it really continues to, I don't know, amaze me on one level. But it also encourages me a lot, because I tell people this a lot, is like the most common comment I get from people is, I thought I was the only one.
That's 100% the male experience, I feel like. I totally resonate with that. That was a major reason that I started this podcast, which was simply my experience with young kids felt like I was broken because I wasn't experiencing things the way either A, I thought I was supposed to, or B, what I saw other dads highlighting either on social or in conversations, or lack of conversation. Oh yeah, I love my kids now, but I hated when they were babies. Why didn't you tell me that? You left that out. That's a very important part. You got to tell me the whole reasoning here. So I totally understand that aspect to your love of what you do.
Yeah, and you know, when I look at my stats, I'm actually surprised to find out that 75% of my followers are women.
How about that?
I did this part by design. Like, I deliberately avoid dad jokes. Don't like them. So
okay.
You know, I
how about this? A professional dad Who doesn't like dad jokes? That's somehow that's a meme or a dad joke.
It is. I realize I'm an anomaly. And I honestly, I don't know a lot of dads that do the dad joke thing. I can appreciate a good pun, and that's all well and good. And there are accounts out there, dad accounts and other meme accounts that, you know, that is their shtick. And that's like that, you know, that is legitimate.
Yeah, more power to them.
Yeah, more power to them. It's a legitimate way to do it. But like, for me, it's like, I found it, on one sense, I found it limiting. And on the other sense, it's like, I wanted, dare I say, I wanted to throw my hat in the ring with everybody. And so I was like, I wanted it to be more universal, not so dad centric. And so a lot of my posts will be, you know, parenthood and parenting rather than mom or dad. Because it's like, this is a universal experience. Getting kids to put on pants, that's a universal experience. Getting kids to eat or to stop eating, you know,
All of it.
Or getting kids to stop falling asleep in their cottage cheese. I mean, it's pretty universal.
Just a daily thing over there.
Just a daily thing over here. You know, and to keep their Matchbox cars out of the cottage cheese. That's also a battle, you know? So I think so much of it is universal. And yes, there are some mom-centric things. There are dad-centric things. But also, you know, I see dads getting bagged on a lot.
Why do you think dads get bagged on? Do you think that's just because social is more vocal and now that's that wasn't happening before and now it is, or it's just now it's more vocalized?
I don't know, you know, constantly coming down through your feed that like, apparently, you know, dads can't find anything and they have to, call from the grocery store 5 or 6 times and, they are not present with their children and they don't wake up with the babies. It's like, that is not my experience at all with any of the dads that I know. And if that is a problem, you know, with your spouse, might want to take that.
Probably talk about
probably
it.
Probably address that rather than bag it on him on social media.
Well, do you know the Dumb Dad podcast, those guys? They're two guys out of California, both stay-at-home dads, actually, actors. I knew them when I lived in LA. I was on their podcast. They were on mine. They've done some really funny stuff, but their whole thing is, we're the Dumb Dad Pod, and then in parentheses it says, the dumb is silent. Because they kind of felt the same way you did, where it was like, dads in media are portrayed oftentimes as unable to do these things, like go to the grocery store and like, which one do I pick up? And when do I do this thing? Or, you know, these types of things. Yes. And so their whole thing is kind of the satirical approach at that.
Yeah.
But their stuff is all very high level comedy. It's not dad jokes. They had, they do a lot of great videos. One of them you may have seen and not known. It was like a sports, like a after game sports conference.
Hilarious.
And he's sitting there talking. Yeah. So that's them. That's the Dumb Dads.
Yeah. Their stuff is hysterical. They're spot on. And they're just that you know, post game interview is just classic. It's like, they're just, they're hilarious. I love them. Yeah.
And, you know, speaking to that element, you know, it was birthed out of that, like, guys, We as men want to be more involved. I can't speak as an entire gender. Many of the fathers I know want to be more involved. Many of the fathers I know are more involved.
Yeah.
So it doesn't help at all if you're like knocking us for our involvement. And sometimes I think that comes from other dads too, because there's an element of like either superiority, I've been in this game longer, you know, I'm a more involved dad, or the other, which is kind of like, hey, I like my dad bod. I like my sofa. I like my whiskey when I come home from work. Like, don't jeopardize this. You know what I mean? With your let's be involved and know our kids' names and where they go to school. That's too much.
How dare you.
Yo, you, yes, you, dad. It's time to start caring a little bit more about yourself. You're doing a great job keeping those little humans alive, but if your personal hygiene game is slipping, it's okay. The folks at Bird Hair are stepping up to help out. They're offering 15% off all of their products to Attempting Fatherhood listeners using the code BIRDAF. That's BYRDAF. So go ahead, grab some body wash, hair product, or shampoo. It's made in California using super clean and natural ingredients, and every purchase directly supports Attempting Fatherhood. So it's a win-win. Okay, back to the show.
But on that note, like, I've also run into, like, it's particularly when I was first starting, I think after a while, people got used to seeing me with my kids, so I was less of a novelty. But there was one time I went to the grocery store and wrangling my kids, and you know, it's almost a prescribed response. The mom said, oh, you know, you have the day with the kids. And I was like, yep, all day, every day. And her eyes dropped, and you could see this wistfulness go across her face. And she was like, I wish mine would do that. And I was like, oh, Dad, just
awkward.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, yeah, it's awkward, and you're just like,
just feel the pain.
What is going on with a man that doesn't want to? It's like, what? This is your, what is happening that you have your own child that you want to, you don't want to fully engage with? I don't, it just escapes my mind when I have these amazing children that are beyond challenging at times.
Yes, yes. Those two things can coexist, by the way. You can love them and be frustrated with them simultaneously.
Yes. Yep. I when I was first starting out, you know, 10 years ago, people were often like, you know, oh, it's the novel dad at the park. Oh, you're out at the park with the kids. And when I was hanging with my buddy, this happened as well. It actually made a post out of it, but we were just there hanging out as we did every day. And we had our snacks and we brought our lunches and we were, you know, kids were playing in the park and we were preventing death and destruction like we normally did. And a mom was saying, they're like, oh, you guys like stay full-time dads. And she was trying to wrap her head around it. Like, yeah, this is what we do. We've been doing this for a while. And she's like, oh my gosh, would you talk to my husband? Because he does not get it.
Wow.
He doesn't get it. It's like in the world of the stay at home parent, so many people don't get it. Like, what do you do all day? And like, do you really want to know?
Yeah.
Because I will have you weeping in a corner if you really knew what I did all day. And it's, you know, I think the exhaustion level that stay at home parents feel, is a really unique circumstance, that it's a lot of working parents don't quite grasp. They may have an inkling of it, like, oh, I need to watch the kids for the weekend while you're away at something.
Right.
And then they kind of experience it, but that's an inaccurate assessment because you know it's ending soon. But when you're doing it full time for years and you don't know when it's going to end, you have to pace yourself and you have to build up the calluses and you have to steal moments of sanity. It's like,
I love that. That's great dad advice. I love that. You're about 50.
I am 50. I'm 52.
Okay. So I'm 41. Yeah. So
okay. You're a young pup.
Young pup. Thank you. I don't always feel that in the mornings when I wake up, but I will hold on to that and I will take that. What was it like growing up for you in terms of your dad? Was he, you know, there's been a major cultural shift, I think, in a lot of ways with this element of kind of dad involvement. So what was it like kind of growing up with your dad? What is something that you loved from his parenting of you that you've kind of incorporated, and then what's something you've decided to leave out?
Growing up in the 70s, we were free range kids. You know, that was back in the day. It was like, you go outside and you come back when the streetlights are on.
Yeah. See you at dinner. You come home from school and then I'll see you at dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was like, you ran around with your friends all day. You hopped on a bike and you went over to a friend's house. You played soccer in the field across the street and played football. And, you know, we would walk to the swimming pool that was 2 miles away. You know, that was a totally different time. So there was a lot of that going on, but my situation was unique in that we were a military family, and my father was career Air Force. We grew up in Omaha, and so we were within spitting distance of the Air Force Base, the Offutt Air Force Base, and he was knee deep in the at the time it was called a Strategic Air Command. It was the SAC headquarters, and if you watch movies from the 70s and 80s, and they talk about Omaha and the SAC Underground. That was our world. And like, if you drive by, like you drive by the Offutt or the airbase, and there would be a sign that would say, do not be alarmed at sudden loud jet engine noise. And that was like standard operating procedure. It's like you'd hear jets fly over every day. And it was, you know, commonplace. And as a result of what he did, we did not move around. We stayed in Omaha. My parents are still in the same house. My elementary school is still across the street. You know, it's the area has changed quite a bit, but that was, you know, everything is, it's weird to go back as an adult and see everything the same, but not the same. But because of what he did, he was gone a lot. He flew reconnaissance. He monitored the Russian
things.
Borders.
Yeah.
Things. And flew up and down the international dateline, doing hundreds of sorties. That's what they called them, monitoring and radar and all that kind of thing. And had many run-ins with MiG fighters. And, you know, just, they're doing their job. You're doing your job.
Right.
And
let's not get too close.
They would, you know, flip each other off, and they would, you know, make each other run into each other, you know, the jet wash, that kind of thing. And there's still a lot of stuff he can't talk about. He has a wall full of medals. It's like, yeah, I can't talk about that one. So he was gone quite a bit, and for weeks at a time. So we were basically raised by my mom. And so with that sort of framework setting everything up, we understood, I think my brother and I have talked about it, that we've understood that even though our father wasn't always there, we understood that what he was doing was noble and patriotic and essential and vital to our, we understood that. Whereas some kids who grew up without a father have the abandonment issues and the betrayal and abuse. You know, with my father, it was, you know, much different sort of scenario. And so I grew up, you know, with a very strong sense of duty and strong sense of responsibility, and that some things were heavy and important, and also that not all things are what they seem.
Oh, that's interesting for a kid.
Yeah. It's like, because like my dad couldn't talk about things.
Right.
And having him get an emergency call at 2 a.m. and, you know, and see the anxiety on both of their faces, and like, okay, what's going on? And, you know, and seeing that very familiar olive green flight suit and the combat boots and the green oversized duffel bag that he would carry around. You know, that brings a flood of memories from my childhood, and dropping your dad off at the tarmac on the airbase, you know, 5:30 a.m.
Wow.
And seeing all of the dads say goodbye to their families, and just feeling, seeing the weight on their faces as they climbed onto the bus. That was really impactful as a little kid about, my dad is doing really important things. And
was that element ever communicated? Like, did your mom sit you down and say, hey guys, I know this is tough, you know, kind of that type of conversation that I feel like now happens, you know, because there's so much communication, mental health, and these types of concepts towards kids. Or was it just kind of like your mom could see that you guys got it, and it was just like you guys were all good with that?
I don't remember like specific conversations, but it was a lot of like, let's do the best we can.
Yeah.
Let's take care of each other. Mm. Let's go out to eat over here to celebrate. There was one time when I was in junior high, my brother was in high school. My father did what is called a PCS. It's called a permanent change of station. At the time, every officer was required to do at least 1 year in a PCS. And so he spent a year in an island called Shemya, which is the second to last inhabited island on the Aleutian Chains off of Alaska.
Whoa.
It's, I believe, 4 square miles, and they call it the Rock. And it's got an air base there, still there. And they would fly off from there to do their reconnaissance. And so when I was in junior high, my dad was gone for a year.
Wow.
And like, I remember when we dropped him off, it was really hard for everybody and emotional. It's like, okay, let's take care of each other. Let's go to the mall. Let's go out to eat to a nice restaurant, and let's support each other. And then, you know, just sort of that process of understanding that we were all in it together. So, you know, a lot of a lot of factors with growing up with all that stuff. My father also, you know, he was involved with a lot of classified and top secret stuff. And so he kept almost his entire life close to his vest. That was his world. And so as a father, I think that tended to keep him very, very private. And he internalized a lot. And, you know, being the military structure, my mom grew up military too. So we were, you know, we were on time for everything. 5:30 dinner meant 5:30 dinner. And so we learned just being responsible around, say what you do or say what you mean and mean what you say. That was what we just grew up knowing and understanding.
So where does your passion for, I'm going to stay at home, I'm going to be a dad, I love being a dad, you know, let's elevate men, let's elevate fatherhood. Where does that come from? Was that something that, you know, it's almost kind of like you feel like this is your duty, you know, like this is your calling, like your father had a bit of duty as well. Or where does that come from for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. I think for me, it's an extension of my life as a dad, and I don't really see it as much in that, you know, on a Christian level, I can think of it as, you know, quote unquote, a ministry, but I don't conflate myself in that regard by any means. But I just feel it as like when I post something, it's much more about like, this is what I'm going through. And, you know, I need to get this out of my head and try to commiserate. And like, you know, we made up a slogan a long time ago, like, if I'm not memeing, I'm screaming. So I guess that's where it just kind of comes from. It's just more of like, it came out of the need of the moment more than anything of like, I need just for my own sanity, my own mental health to somehow wrap my head around these experiences. Me as a toddler, I don't remember how I was dealt with as a toddler. And, you know, so I'm like, okay, you know, what did my dad do? Well, I don't remember what my dad did. So it's like, and so I'm looking at my kids like, yeah. I don't know. And like, you know, you can, you know, Google all day long, like what happens when my kid does this? And it's like, you'll get
totally
divergent opinions and whatever. And it's like, well, it's like, I have to, you know, engage my child in so many different levels. The spiritual, the intellectual, the physical, the emotional, and like trying to invert myself into their mind of like, because I remember being 5 years old and understanding everything.
Wow.
But I didn't know how to express it.
Right.
Like, you know, you understand betrayal, you understand infatuation.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say I am the same kid, same person that I was when I was 5 years old. I just know myself.
Wow, that's, you know, mind-blowing. That's such an interesting thought, like that you're kind of fully formed. You know, I've heard therapists and people talk about, like, you know, a lot of that initial wound, you know, and I think, you know, trauma can be relative. It doesn't have to be, you know, my mom died in a car crash. It can be, you know, my dad yelled at me at this moment. It can be small trauma, but a lot of those things happen by the time you're like 6 or 7. And there's just the rest of your life that calls back to those moments or is a repeat of those moments. So it's interesting that you would say, like, I'm the same person I was at age 5. I could just now express myself. It's so funny. I love that.
Yeah. And I understand the emotions better. I understand the motivations better. I understand how to navigate, you know, how I'm feeling, how to, what's the word? How to express
I
myself
find it great
either.
That you're like, what's the word for expressing? I'm such a good expresser. I can't express what I'm so good at expressing.
I'm so articulate. I've learned how to navigate that web of emotions and the layers of the emotions, I guess, far more better. You know, I don't know if you're a fan of the Enneagram.
Yeah, this is, it's on fire with everyone around me. So, and has been for, to the point, I've got friends on both sides of the spectrum, you know, somebody that's like, oh, that's such a 3. Of course a 3 would do that, you know. And then the other person that's just like, this is such crap. Like, just throw it out the window. So, I was on it like early, like Myers-Briggs type of stuff. And then the Enneagram came along. For people who are listening, can you explain that just as a quick, like, if people don't know what that is?
The Enneagram is just basically a personality
almost like again, rating system or like a profile a little
bit. I'd call it personality profiles, and like it describes it in 9 different basic personality types, and then but there's also, you know, you can have a wing element, so like a 1 can have a 1 with a strong 2 wing or 1 with a strong 9 wing. And what I really appreciated about it was like when you identify your core number, that how you degrade, what you degrade to and what you progress toward. Like if you're healthy, the 5, okay. I'm a 5, I'm a castle 5 for all of you who are into that. When I'm healthy, I progress towards an 8, which is really forceful. And
military? Some would say
brutally.
Maybe military-like?
Maybe militant, tyrannical. but they can be brutally honest, and they're extremely confident in how they are approaching something. But I also degrade towards a 7, and an unhealthy 7 is somebody who's just wishy-washy, no direction, everything is hunky-dory, I'm, you know, it's all whatever, man.
That's
it's
the 70s.
It's all good, bro. Yeah. So I've learned a lot from understanding that arena, and it's also helped me understand my kids.
Like, yeah, I was going to ask, how do you as a father kind of then take that information and apply it to your role of understanding your kids, and also like you talked about, like helping them understand themselves, right? Like if we believe that our kids are kind of fully formed by this, you know, 4 or 5 years old, then they need their rails to be able to interpret themselves. So how do you do that?
Yeah, the rails, like, and I think my role, one of my roles as a father is that huge guardrail that they constantly bump up against. And like, I think that my oldest son is a 5 like me, because of all the different circumstances that we've come in contact with. And so with that understanding, I'm like, okay, this is what I wish I could have had when I was that age. And this is how I wish someone would have addressed me, rather than, you know, nothing specific, but rather than somebody just dismissing my feelings or telling me to get out of my blue funk. Yeah. It's like, how about address the reality of it and help me navigate these intense emotions that I'm feeling. And I feel, you know, as a 5, I feel things so differently. Yes, as an INFJ, thanks to the Myers-Briggs, I feel things so deeply. How do I express that? And like finding outlets for my son to be able to release that intense emotion and find ways that he can creatively express it. And that, you know, led me into a lot of the arts for me, music, writing, acting, filmmaking. It had to get out some way, because I had all these intense emotions. I didn't have a way to express them or experience them the way that I wish I could, because, you know, if I'm an introvert, you know, I'm not going to be like walking into a town hall somewhere and lecturing people on things like that. But as an actor, I can take on a role that is, you know, far more boisterous and
as an outlet,
whatever. And I can fully engage that and allow that 5 or 10% of my personality to become 90%.
You know, as you're understanding yourself, you're then kind of multiplying that out or using that as a way to help understand your kids. Is there anything that you would like go back and tell yourself, you know, day one, kid one, baby's born? What kind of advice would you give that dad?
The biggest thing is I would say, don't be afraid to ask for a break. And for the first, I'm trying to remember how many years it was at least 3 years. It was into our second kid. And I had a project I was working on and I didn't have any time to complete it. And I just asked, hey, can I? My wife works full time. She's a graphic designer. And I was like, can I have Saturday morning off so I can go finish this? And she's like, yeah, absolutely. Whatever you need. And so I went there and I sat down to try to work on stuff. And I literally stared at the wall for an hour because I did not realize how unhealthy I was.
Wow.
And
because you've just been going.
Yeah. You know, you just get your head down. You're thinking, it's like, I'm taking care of 2 kids. I don't have time to complain. It's like, my wife is working full time. She's working overtime. My kids still need diapers. My kids still aren't taking naps. I've got to navigate that. And they're still waking up 3 or 4 times a night. And so, you know, you're just navigating. You're in survival. You're just pure survival mode. And it was when I got home from that morning, my wife said, "So how'd it go?" And I was like, "That was amazing." And it's like, I need to do that more. I did not realize how unhealthy I was. And you've got to separate yourself from the process to realize, wow, I am not healthy, like, at all. And from that point on, we have worked together to make sure that I have some sort of break every week. And, you know, that was started 3 or 4 years ago. And so it's like every week we work to, like, okay, I need some, can I have, usually it's an afternoon on the weekend. Sometimes, you know, an evening if I'm like really, really struggling, to be like, why don't you go take off? And for me, my decompression is a movie. Like just going to a movie, completely engaging and getting lost. And that is the best decompression for me. I don't have any kid interrupting me, or, you know, I'm not touched out or anything like that.
Did you guys know when you got married that was going to be the setup? I'm going to be stay-at-home dad, you be full-time worker. How did that conversation happen? How did that evolution happen? I see the smile on your face as there's books to be written about this.
You know, it's one of those serendipitous things, honestly. It's like, I've always been drawn to kids. My brother's got 4, and I growing up, I would work in the church nursery and, you know, that kind of a thing. And I always loved kids, but we just, for whatever reason, we just knew that it was not time for us to be having kids. And for all we knew, that we would not be able to. We were going to live our lives without kids. And when my wife got pregnant, it was like, you know, standard sort of thing. And she was working full time. And right about that time, I was working in IT, and the company I was working for started fading and was, you know, you could see the writing on the wall that they were not going to be around much longer. And when we had the baby, she got a 6-month maternity leave through her, awesome, through her work. 3 months, you know, because of FEMA, you know, you can up to 6 months and you're guaranteed to have your job back. And so by the end of her, like, literally, this is how it all really all worked out, was like the last day of her maternity leave was my last day working for the company because it had gone out of business. And I had unplugged all the servers and turned them in. And that was,
wow.
So it was like literally that next Monday, she went to work and I was home with the kid. And it was a very short conversation, honestly. It was like, what are we going to do after maternity leave? She's like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, I can just stay with the kid. And for her, it was like, you know, she grew up with a mom,
sure,
who stayed home, and I grew up with a mom
more
who stayed home.
So we're
trying to wrap her. Yeah, more traditional. And like my wife always considered that she would be the one to stay home, and that was a no-brainer. And so when this opened up and she had a good career going, it was like, this makes sense.
Wow.
And it just started from there.
Did you think at the time, like, all right, this is it? Or was it kind of like, I'll kind of be a stopgap and then, you know, another IT job will come and maybe we'll hire a nanny? I mean, that more of a traditional mindset going in? Or was it like, you know what? I think this is it. I'm just going to do this.
I think for a period, there's definitely like, you know, we can put the kid in daycare and I can just get another job because, like, that's what's expected. Just go get another job.
Right, right.
And then we started realizing that daycare was going to cost as much or more than me working full time. My kids are full time school now. And last year at this time, they were finally going back full time. And that was a really difficult week. It was a really, really hard week. I did a post about it, and, you know, it condensed.
Because you kind of became an empty nester, kind of, or what do you mean?
Well, I condensed a lot of emotions in the post that I wrote for that particular day. It's just 3 lunch boxes set up, and it's like, I have looked forward to this day that, you know, the kids are all full-time in school. I have the days to myself. But it's like, when I think back to how difficult these years have been and how stressful and how hard, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. My word. Mm. You've got three lives that are completely and utterly dependent upon you that cannot be away from you for any length of time, or they will literally die. And at the same time, you're not only a guardrail against like, hey, I want you to sever off your limb here, but I'm also, you know, a spiritual guide, an intellectual guide about like, you know, this is appropriate behavior. This is what's a better response? And hey, we don't hit, we don't pull hair, leave the dog alone, stop licking the window, you know, that kind of thing. And so it pulled in so many different directions and so many different hats constantly all day long, and you never know which hat you're going to need to wear. And then when you break down and you lose your temper, you'd feel awful. And when I've got my boys are extremely strong-willed and extremely defiant, and so the toddler years were brutal. It's like, hey, let's go to a park, and they would scream, "No!" I'm like, wait a second,
it's a park. It's full of park. Fun.
There's
the dentist.
Yeah, there's a sand pit and there's a tornado slide. Like, what is happening?
So you have those lunch boxes and you have this dichotomy of emotion, right? Where it's like, I've been looking forward to this, but also this is the end of a major chapter in my dad life, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that was the difficult, just coming to terms with what happens now. And it's still an ongoing question because I don't know. It's also like reliving those moments of like, I didn't think this was ever going to happen. And then it's also the doubting and the questioning. It's like, have I been effective? Have I supported them enough, yet still been a guide rail, yet still been a trail guide? Yeah. The weight of that emotion, that was a really difficult few days of like, you know, the house was very, very different. It just felt really different. And then they came home and everything was chaos again.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, wait a second, this is supposed to be a really emotional day for me and you're not validating my feelings. They're just like, where's the snacks, Dad? Where's my chocolate? Yeah. Oh, I hate
school.
Nothing
changed for them. Yeah, right. It's for you, yeah.
It's not the end.
Yep.
But this is my season. It might be my season for another 10 years until my kids are out of the house.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like looking at things in seasons. That's something that, you know, when I was younger, it was like, got my 10-year plan, got my 15-year plan, you know, and it was like, that just, none of that happened. Yeah, it's like, boop, exactly. And so, you know, at the same time, like, truly being grateful or trying, this is the word trying, but definitely insert the word trying, to be grateful for the moments that we have and seeing them as they're going to change. All good things come to an end. All bad things come to an end. It's a season, you know, and I think you can really measure that with kids because, you know, that the early baby stage is a season that kind of moves. Yeah. And then you have toddler, which is, I've got a 1.5-year-old and an 8-year-old. So, you know, we're kind of working on different seasons there as well. So that's really helpful for me to kind of understand. And also kind of like a runner would see their stage, like, okay, so I'm halfway, I'm a quarter of the way, I'm through, you know, I'm just going to run the next 2 miles, then I'm going to run the next 2 miles. And you see it as a season and it makes it more manageable, I guess. As we kind of wrap this up, what is something you could say? You've said so much pertinent and helpful information for stay-at-home dads, working dads, stay-at-home moms, working moms, all of this. Like you said, the parent experience is really universal, but specifically to just dads who are listening, what's some advice you could give to them, some encouragement that you could give to them?
I would say empathy goes a long way for a young child. Having them, you know, they may, you know, experiencing a huge emotional outburst over a piece of plastic that broke. That emotion is still valid. You can say the reaction, we can temper that and say, like, hey, let's work through this. But to not dismiss the child's feelings because it's not my core reality at their moment. That's their core reality.
That's so good.
It's so much of it is understanding the needs of each child. So much of getting into the mind of like, what does the kid respond to?
Yeah, that's good.
And I've heard it described as like, what is the kid's currency? What is their currency?
Yeah, that's good too.
Catch your child doing good and reward the positive opposite. So if your child is, you know, talking back every time you ask them a question, then you find the positive opposite, which is like answering politely, and then you reward that positive opposite rather than punish. Yes. Hey, you're talking back, you're grounded.
Yep.
you're like, hey, if you had given me a more polite response, I would add 5 marbles to yeah. this jar that holds yep. 100 marbles or whatever. And then once that jar is full, we can do X. And then you find out what your kid's currency is and then you kind of move from
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's good too. Love what you're doing at Real Tough Dad and you know what you're about. So really appreciate you opening up to that for all of our fathers out there who are listening and keep dadding. You're doing great.
I'm grateful for the opportunity. I don't get out much.
An adult wants to talk to me? Yeah.
An adult? Yeah. What? Oh, what? That'd be 4 words.
Should I shower, honey? Is that a thing that is that? Do people still do that? Is showering a thing? Okay, all right, I'll do it.
Yes, but I'm grateful for the opportunity and you know, look forward to you continuing to do great things too with this great podcast that are reaching out to so many people.
That's the hope. Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Attempting Fatherhood. My whole hope with this is that we build a community that encourages dads and that brings new information to the table and gets you excited about living your life, doing what you're doing. If you have felt that way, please make sure you rate us on Spotify, on Apple. Just rate us, give us some stars, hopefully 5, and make sure you share this. That's equally important. It's a great way to build community, to share this information with other dads. You know, start a text chain, whatever. That helps us, that helps you. We grow this community and all that. Thanks again for listening. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at Attempting Fatherhood. Again, thank you so much and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.